Did you do it?
Yes.
What did it cost?
Everything.
Welcome in, Eagles fans, to another edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast. As always, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Louis DiBiase joining you on this Monday night on the show. The pads are on. Eagles training camp has been going now for a couple of weeks at the NovaCare Complex, but today kind of feels like Christmas morning. Like, today really feels like the start of football season. I think the start I've always associated, you know, as a kid growing up through the summer, was my fantasy draft, like when my fantasy draft happened and when the pads came on at training camp. And of course, preseason, right? The Eagles' first preseason game was supposed to be last Thursday. But when the pads come on and when my fantasy draft comes up, that's when I know, okay, the summer's not over. You know, the weather's still nice, but it's football season. I'm ready for sweatshirt and shorts weather. I'm ready for clouds and a little bit of wind. And I'm ready at halftime to go outside, play catch with a brother at 10 years old. I'm ready to watch some Eagles football. My fantasy draft is this Sunday, and the pads have come on at the NovaCare Complex for the Eagles on Monday. And it was a jam-packed news day for the team. Today we're going to go around the beat, and we're going to look at what happened at the Eagles' first padded practice. It was also the first day that the media could actually watch practice. And that's been the tough part with COVID-19 is that, you know, training camp's been going on the past couple weeks, but really, we really don't know what's going on outside of what we hear from coaches and players through interviews. And, you know, some coaches give you nothing, some players give you nothing but coach speak and narratives and that kind of stuff. So today, it was awesome to see videos. It was awesome to see, you know, the team doing live streams for the practice. Like, we actually got to see some practice footage on the Eagles' social media platforms. Felt like the old days, right, with Dave Spadaro doing training camp live for 6 hours a day. And I remember as a kid, like 11, 12 years old, just sitting down in front of the computer, you know, at noon and watching until like 4 or 5 o'clock until the Eagles' practice was over, just watching training camp live. And it kind of felt like that today to a lesser degree. I just love training camp right now. I get sick of training camp tweets later on, but for right now, I'll really take it. And today we're going to get into, again, what happened at practice. But we also got to get into, you know, of course, the Nigel Bradham comments. We'll get into segment 3, who doesn't love a good former Eagles player bashing his former team? Or at least we thought he was bashing his former team. Bradham did supposedly clarify his comments, you know, later on after his interview. He's on the New Orleans Saints now, and he was asked a question about, you know, coming into a winning organization. We'll get into in segment 3 what he said and what I think he tried to say when he clarified. But first, we have to get into the issue that just won't go away. I don't know what this team has to do. And you heard the sound clip from the Avengers before the theme song. Ever since this team, and before it, but ever since 2017 when the Eagles won the Super Bowl, and even that year, because you lost Carson Wentz, you lost Jordan Hicks, you lost Jason Peters, you lost Darren Sproles. Ever since that season, it feels like the Eagles sold their soul for a championship, and what they had to give up to get that title was a good bill of health across the roster. 2017, 2018, 2019, injuries across the roster. Everything fun the Eagles bring in, whether it's a new corner, whether it's a fun new offensive piece at running back, or, you know, Jordan Howard, whether it's DeSean Jackson, whether it's an offensive lineman up front like Brandon Brooks or Lane Johnson or always Jason Peters, or on defense, you sign Malik Jackson in week one last year, he gets hurt next to Fletcher Cox, right at defensive end, Derek Barnett, Jalen Mills, I mean, in the secondary. Every year, I don't know if this is just a curse that will continue, but the Eagles are not, they're one day into padded practice. They just started training camp. And again, it started with Brandon Brooks 2 months ago now, with a torn Achilles. Before the season even started, you lost your best offensive lineman, one of the best offensive linemen, if not the best offensive lineman in football, in right guard Brandon Brooks for the season. Hopefully he comes back at the end of the year. Right now he was not placed on IR. But regardless, a torn Achilles, you could imagine Brooks is not going to play at least the vast majority of the season. Then your head coach, Doug Peterson, gets coronavirus and misses a week and a half of training camp in person. Now, and this is to a lesser degree because it's not a overly severe injury, hopefully, knock on wood, but you bring in this new, the big fish free agent signing, an elite defensive tackle, a young one too, and he's, you know, Fletcher Cox is a top 2 defensive tackle in the league, top 10 defensive lineman. Javon Hargrave at defensive tackle is a top 5 DT, I think, in his own right, or at least you can argue top 7, top 10 at the very least. Like, he was that big payday. You got the best defensive tackle Fletcher Cox has ever played with next to him. And what happens today? The news comes out that he has a pectoral strain and he is out multiple weeks. He injured it in the weight room, not on the practice field. And I know this isn't something like, oh, Javon Hargrave is out for the year. But can we just go? I mean, it's the first day of padded practice. I'm trying to get excited about all the cool new headlines, the play-by-play, the fun new connections we're seeing formed on offense, the different looks, the different lineups on defense, the position battles. I'm trying to get excited about all of that. And the first day, before we can even hit the freaking field, you have Javon Hargrave out multiple weeks. You have Jason Peters day-to-day with a lower body injury. You have J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, lower body injury day-to-day. I feel like I'm reading an NHL hockey report. Derek Barnett, lower body injury week-to-week. I mean, oh my God. Like, when does it end? No matter what this team does, they throw out their medical staff. They bring in a brand new chief of medical. They try everything it seems in the book, sports science, whatever. They go young across the roster. They go old across the roster. Whatever they do, is this team just always going to... And look, I know in the NFL, injuries are always going to happen across the team. It is going to happen. It's a part of... It's the nature of the game. But for the Eagles, like, you cannot say this is the nature of the game. You cannot blame age. You cannot blame injury-prone players. It happens, I feel like, to every single Eagle. There's some sort of injury we have to deal with. And Hargrave, look, he should be back in a few weeks. That's the initial report. The team felt like they dodged a bullet. They were actually initially scared that he had torn his pectoral muscle, which would have been huge. That would have been devastating. But at the same time, quote-unquote, should be back in a few weeks. That normally, for most teams, like, you'd be like, all right, cool. He should be ready for the start of the regular season. Maybe he misses a game or two, but, you know, he's not going to miss extensive time with this team. And it won't be a big deal. The Eagles still have Fletcher Cox, and they have Malik Jackson, and, you know, Brandon Graham can play inside, as can Vinnie Curry, who they just re-signed last week to the team, heading into 2020. So not like a huge deal. They have a lot of other pieces up front on the defensive line. At the same time, I get nightmares thinking... I remember DeSean Jackson last year and how they talked about that injury, and Jalen Mills the year before with that Liz Frank injury, and Jordan Howard last year. It felt like he was week to week, literally from week 7 up until week 17. And for 10 weeks, that guy, you know, or at least half the season, we didn't see him on the football field, a key piece of that offense early in the year when their passing game was struggling because they lost DeSean Jackson, who you kept thinking week after week, all right, is DeSean Jackson ready yet? Oh, you know, he's still week to week, lower body injury. They were being super limited in the information they released, right? And then DeSean Jackson misses the entire year. He comes back for 2 plays against Chicago, you know, week 9, week 10. I just should be back in a few weeks. Normally would be fine. And I'm hoping it will be with Hargrave, and they don't necessarily need him right now. They will down the road, I think, to truly meet this potential that the defensive line wants to have. But I do get nervous based on what we've seen the past couple of years with these kind of, you know, vague injuries, or at least vague timetables, because we know that, of course, he does have a minor pectoral strain. But even though it's hopefully minor and he did dodge a bullet and the team dodged a bullet here, I just want to enjoy this team at full strength for once. Can you give me until week 8 before there's key? I mean, that's not even, again, I know the injury report's going to have players every week, but why does it always have to be a big piece of the puzzle every single time. It's day one. I basically count this as the start of training camp, and they already have Jason Peters, Javon Hargrave, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, and Derek Barnett on the injury report. All players you would hope would be big pieces of the puzzle this year. And you just throw your hands up in the air, and it's like, what are you supposed to do? I mean, defensive tackle, too, seems like a cursed position. Anybody that they try to put next to Fletcher Cox gets hurt. Timmy Jernigan, Malik Jackson last year, Javon Hargrave, Hassan Ridgeway. It seems like it doesn't matter. Who was it? Haloti Ngata in 2018 dealt with injuries. No matter what they try to do, these guys just get injured. And so there is the initial injury report from Monday. Javon Hargrave, not expected to miss a ton of time, is out multiple weeks. But it's just the frustration. It's really starting to set in because this is year four now, and I'm tired of talking about this. I was hoping to start fresh here, a new slate. And we're already talking about injuries, and I don't want to talk about injuries at all. So you know what we're going to do next? We're going to get into the positive stuff. We got rid of the negative injury report that was a necessary evil to talk about on today's show, but I do want to get into what happened on practice, because overall, it was a really fun day of camp that I'll get into coming up next right here on Locked On Eagles. All right, Eagles fans, welcome back into this late-night Monday edition of the show. We are recapping day one of padded practice at NovaCare Complex during Eagles training camp. Overall, a really fun day of camp. Again, I know the injuries are super frustrating, especially on day one. Javon Hargrave suffering a pectoral strain. He'll be out for a couple weeks. Derek Barnett is week-to-week with a lower body injury. Jason Peters, day-to-day with a lower body, as is J.J. Arcega-Whiteside at wide receiver. Overall, though, really fun day. Again, I'm just so pumped to see training camp Twitter back. I get sick of the overreactions eventually, but right now I love the stats, the one-on-one clips, the team's social media montages. And again, I love that the Birds brought back live practice streams to a certain degree, like the good old days on Monday. And what I was really pumped about yesterday was this offense. I am so excited about the weapons Carson Wentz has. And it's easier to get excited about new additions to the team when they're at positions like wide receiver. Obviously, offensive line, defensive line, you need to have those pieces. But when you draft those kind of guys, when you sign big name offensive and defensive linemen, not to say that that's not exciting, but it is just like the fan in you, the kid fan in you, gets so pumped when you sign a flashy, new speed receiver, or you draft one early like Jalen Reagor, or you trade for one. And to see all the playmakers now that Carson Wentz have, of course not proven players by any stretch of the imagination, but to see the talent that's actually out there on the field this year, it's different, man. I've been excited about these offenses the past couple years. Last year in 2019, of course, with Alshon Jeffrey, Nelson Agholor, DeSean Jackson, you know, Jordan Howard, Miles Sanders, Dallas Goedert, Zach Ertz. I was pumped about last year's team. But this year, just the one thing we wanted so bad was speed and players that can make plays deep. And, you know, we finally might not get to score. You don't have to go on these 15-play drives because of the likes of DeSean Jackson and Miles Sanders and Jalen Reagor and Boston Scott, John Hightower, Quez Watkins. Even Corey Clement was out there impressing the team today. I saw a couple beat reporters say that Clement looked as close as 2017 today as he's had in 2 years. So to see all those potential options for Wentz out there that have the ability that this Eagles offense has not had in a very long time is so exciting. And it was awesome to see Carson Wentz and Jalen Reagor, you know, form the chemistry that they have over the offseason. And you saw that on the field. On Monday, that connection had some big plays over the middle of the field. Reagor was getting first-team reps at wide receiver with DeSean Jackson and Greg Ward. And what was cool was in 12 personnel, when Zach Ertz and Dallas Goedert come out with two tight ends, the two receivers out there were DeSean Jackson and Jalen Reagor. I love seeing tweets like I saw the one from WIP's Elliot Shore Park saying that Reagor reminds him of DeSean Jackson and Jeremy Maclin. Like, to have this kind of young, explosive wide receiver for Wentz to grow chemistry. I mean, what has Geno said on this podcast for 3 years now? He wants young targets that Wentz can form long-term chemistry with, right? You see, like, let's look at Green Bay. You know, Aaron Rodgers, and it was Jordy Nelson, and now Devontae Adams, and Matt Ryan and Julio Jones from the start of their careers in Atlanta. It would be nice to see Wentz and Reagor form the chemistry that you see, like, Carson Wentz and Zach Ertz have had for, it's going on, what, year five now? I mean, since Wentz was a rookie, you've seen Wentz and Ertz have that chemistry now that we want to see with Jalen Reagor. And I think you saw that start on the field on Monday. And of course, those two have been working out this summer together. They have been throwing together. But Reagor, man, it was cool to see him out there making plays. This is somebody that, like, of course, Carson Wentz is going to make him better. And Reagor finally has that kind of quarterback for himself. Because at TCU, he had abysmal quarterback play. He was, what, 122 of 122 in the wide receiver prospect class last year when it comes to accurate targets thrown his way. Like, it was as bad as it could get. And this is someone that clearly made his quarterbacks better. Like, this was somebody that made plays for his quarterback. To now see that Reagor is going to have somebody like Carson Wentz getting him the football, I mean, no wonder the Eagles saw the potential in this kid. The sky is absolutely the limit. We got a little taste on Monday. He made one of the plays of the day on a red zone drill in the right corner of the end zone. He laid out for a touchdown grab from Jalen Hurts. So to see Reagor out there, he was also with the first team at punt returner. To see that kind of player that can make his quarterbacks better, not just, you know, Wentz making him better, but for him to be able to make Wentz better, I'm so excited to have that kind of player at his age, hopefully with Carson for his entire career. So again, the starting three receivers, interesting. It was DeSean Jackson, Jalen Reagor, and Greg Ward. They were all lining up. And what I love about that lineup is they can all line up everywhere. Greg Ward is primarily going to be in the slot in that formation, but you want DeSean Jackson inside, especially like in reduced splits or in the slot. That's where he makes most of his plays now at 34 years old. Not to say he doesn't have the explosiveness to win one-on-one on the outside, but in Washington and Tampa Bay and last year in Philly, week one, D-Jax has done most of his damage in reduced splits inside. So you're going to have times where DeSean Jackson is inside in that lineup, and Jalen Reagor also got reps in the slot too. So to have those three versatile pieces is really fun and exciting. I'm not sure if that's going to be the way the three receivers, you know, shake out throughout training camp here. If it's going to be Jackson, Reagor, and Ward, what I can tell you is that Jackson and Reagor, I think, are going to be the starters full-time, 11 personnel, 12 personnel, as long as there is two receivers out there. I think those two are your top two receivers. Greg Ward, there was the report last week that he is in the starting mix. Doug Peterson even said it. You know, he's a veteran. He's a leader in this wide receiver room that produced at a high level, formed a really good connection with your quarterback and Carson Wentz at the end of last year in some huge moments. He came up the biggest at wide receiver. So he's, of course, going to be in the starting mix. So you're going to see him with the first team. I will say, take this with a grain of salt, what you saw on Monday, of course, because it's just training camp day one, but also because J.J. Arcega-Whiteside was out with an injury. So it will be interesting to see. J.J. right now is day-to-day. When he does return to the practice field, will he replace Greg Ward? It'll be telling if he does not. If he doesn't, that's a problem for your second-round draft pick. If he can't beat out, you would, as much as I love Greg Ward and what he provides to this team, if your second-round pick from 2019 can't beat out a guy that was on your practice squad for 3 years before this, an undrafted former quarterback, that is an issue. He has to earn one of those starting spots by the start of the year, or else it might, I don't want to say it's over for JJ because he's only in year two, and I don't want to, you know, rule him dead in the water. But remember, if Alshon Jeffery is going to be on this team, even if he's on the PUP list to start the year, by week six, if he's back and JJ has not earned a spot, Alshon Jeffery will probably come back, and then I don't see a way Arcega-Whiteside is cracking the lineup. It's really tough for me to find any sort of enthusiasm for him. I'm trying to get excited about him, but it's telling when people are more excited about Quez Watkins and John Hightower and Greg Ward over your second-round pick last year. And it's understandable, though. The film from last year was abysmal, and I know Carson Walsh, the Eagles' wide receiver coach last year, and injuries as well, was a huge reason, you know, J.J. wasn't able to perform, and he just really struggled in his rookie year. But a lot of that's on him, too. Like, there just weren't a lot of reps to feel good about. There wasn't a lot of separation created. He didn't make those contested impressive catches in the red zone like he did at Stanford. There were some really bad drops. I'm going to blame him for that loss against Detroit week three. I know there was a lot of plays that could have went different and you win that game, but JJ, the play of the game, the final play of the game, the ball's in his hands. If he catches that football, the Eagles win the game. So it's hard to get excited about him right now, and I know in year two, I've justified to not giving up on him. I'm certainly not giving up on him yet. That would be irresponsible. Somebody that saw Nelson Agholor rejuvenate his career in 2017 and 2018 after that guy. I mean, if Nelson Agholor can bounce back after the first 2 years of his career, I'm not going to give up on anybody after year one. But it is telling that I don't feel the buzz around him like I do for fifth and sixth round draft picks like John Hightower and Quez Watkins and an undrafted guy like Greg Ward who's been on your practice squad. I'm trying to find that enthusiasm. I went back to the film trying to find positives. There just wasn't a lot of them. And so we'll see. Again, I think I've been saying all offseason, he's going to get the first crack at being that wide receiver three behind Jackson and Rager. Right now, though, they're talking up Greg Ward. He got the first team reps on Monday. I know Arthego Whiteside was out with an injury, but we'll see what happens when he comes back. I'm very, very, and I know they're all going to rotate. So JJ, Ward, Rager, Hightower and Watkins at times too, like they're all going to get, you know, first team reps. But I want to know who's going to be the guy that gets the majority of snaps. Is it Ward? Is it Arthego Whiteside? Because if it's Ward when JJ's back, oh man, that spells trouble for guys like Geno that loved this kid coming out of Stanford. I really didn't love him that much. I was devastated they didn't take DK Metcalf over him and guys like Terry McLaurin and that they couldn't get to Mecole Hardman or Deebo Samuel. But we'll see what happens. But that's the interesting takeaway from Monday, I think, the most, was Rager, Jackson, and Greg Ward as your starting three wide receivers. But again, like the buzz is more so around guys like Watkins and Hightower over Jaja. I mean, Wentz connected with Quez Watkins on multiple big plays on Monday, back-to-back touchdowns in the red zone. Wentz, by the way, sharp all day, especially in the red zone. Shocker. This is a top three red zone quarterback since 2016. Even John Hightower had one of the biggest plays of the game. He beat Rasul Douglas one-on-one press coverage. It would have been a 30-plus yard touchdown in a real game from Jalen Hurts, who also really impressed. Speaking of Rasul Douglas, he was a backup with Sidney Jones behind Darius Slay, Avante Maddox, and Nickell Robey. So the starting three, Avante Maddox was CB2. As expected, he is right now the favorite to win that job. Slay was obviously your starting outside corner with Maddox. Nickell Robey Coleman, your starting slot corner. Then your three backups, Rasul Douglas, Sidney Jones, and Cravon LeBlanc. Sidney Jones is going to have a shot to win that job. I will say, it's going to be really tough for Rasul, especially with no preseason. As much as I love Douglas, he does not match up well with these speed wide receivers that the Eagles have. I mean, you saw in one-on-ones the other day, he had to go up against Quez Watkins. Watkins beats him on a double move, one-handed catch in the end zone. I mean, Rasul, I love Douglas, but it's a tough road for him. I don't even think there's a chance anyway, but if he had a realistic shot at winning this job, it's the odds weren't going to be in his favor anyway with who he has to cover one-on-one in training camp. Louis DiBiase joining you right here on Locked On Eagles. When we come back, I want to get into these Nigel Bradham comments that he made during a press conference. He's on the New Orleans Saints now, and they kind of talked about, you know, him starting his career in New Orleans compared to Buffalo and Philadelphia, the other two teams he played for, the Bills and the Eagles. I think he misspoke. He clarified, and it seemed like he said that he misspoke, but what he said really fired up Eagles Twitter because of how wrong what he said up front was. We'll get into that coming up next right here on Locked On Eagles. All right, Eagles fans, welcome back in. We are wrapping up this Monday night edition of Locked On Eagles, episode one this week, one of 5 to 6 downloaded into your phone when you subscribe to Locked On Eagles on any podcast platform or on LockedOnEagles.com. So Nigel Bradham talked about how joining the Saints, it's joining a winning organization unlike the other two teams that he played for. The Buffalo Bills, which is correct. The Bills were, I think, going on a 14-year playoff drop at the time Bradham got there. By the time he left in 2016, they had not made the playoffs for 17 seasons. Understandable what he said about the Buffalo Bills. I work up in Buffalo. I work for the Bills radio affiliate. He was right to say that. But he included the Eagles in this comment. And in every way, any way you could have spun what he meant, he was wrong. And it was laughable. A guy that was a starting linebacker for the team, when they won a Super Bowl in 2017, they made the playoffs in 3 straight seasons with him at linebacker. In 4 years with the Eagles, Bradham made the playoffs 3 of 4. So that part he couldn't be right about. They were obviously a winning organization when he was here. They won a championship when he was here. And even before that, This was a team that had made 5 NFC championships in the 21st century. They had only missed the playoffs a couple times, right? Once with Chip Kelly, a couple times with Andy Reid in 2011 and 2012, also 2005, 2007. But for the most part, this has been one of the best teams in the NFL since the start of the century. 4 straight NFC titles, 2 Super Bowl appearances. He was on one of the teams when they won a championship. No way to spin this. It made sense to me. He did clarify later that he meant when he came in, Chip Kelly had that team in ruins, and that Bradham, all the new free agents, the new organization with Doug Peterson, with Howie Roseman, they built that winning culture. That makes more sense to me, because why he'd have, I mean, maybe, I thought at first, sure, I mean, anybody would be upset if a team thought Nate Geary was a better inside linebacker than you. I mean, of course, that would make me upset, but I was trying to think, like, what does he mean here? The Chip Kelly stuff, I didn't really think of. Okay, yeah, that's true. For one season, they really did not have a winning culture established. But even with Chip, I mean, Chip Kelly seems like the dark days of the Philadelphia Eagles 21st century, and they went 10-6 his first year and 10-6 in his second. So that's why it didn't make sense to me even in that light at first. It does make sense that they kind of rebuilt that winning culture under Doug and Howie and Carson Wentz and Nick Foles. So that makes sense. I hope that's what he meant, because no other way I looked at it could it have been justified. I'm thinking, why is Nigel Bradham upset? Is it really because they just thought Nate Geary was better than him and they just decided to move on and not re-sign him? Because it was just a crazy comment. The Eagles have been one of the best teams since 2000 in the NFL, and with Bradham on this team, they had made the postseason in 3 or 4 years, and he was a key piece to them winning a Super Bowl. So that's why I thought at first it was making me nuts. I probably shouldn't have said anything until he clarified, because I'm trying to think, I'm like, how can he be, like, this dumb? Like, oh my God, you were on the team. Like, what? What are you smoking? So I'm glad he clarified what he meant. I hope that's actually what he means, because if he doesn't, that's some of the stupidest comments you could possibly make. And I want to like Nigel Bradham. He was such a crucial piece of this defense. He was one of the quarterbacks of your defense. Him and Malcolm Jenkins on that second and third level, nobody meant more than those two. When Jordan Hicks went down, Nigel Bradham carried the load. He was a guy that got hot when it mattered most. He made big plays when it mattered most in 2017. In 2018, he saved his best football for the most important stages. He was a leader of that team for a long time. He was a pickup in 2016 that I was skeptical of. In Buffalo, I wasn't so sure about Nigel Bradham coming to Philadelphia, and he exceeded every expectation that I had for him. So I'm glad that he clarified, because I was not ready to hate Nigel Bradham for those stupid comments. Louis DiBiase joining you right here on the Locked On Eagles podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. We will be back tomorrow. Be sure to subscribe to the show, because again, with the season here now, we got 4 to 6 episodes a week being downloaded into your phone. Nobody posts more Eagles podcasts a week than the Locked On Eagles podcast. Follow me on Twitter at DiBiase LOE, and I'll see you guys tomorrow. As always, thank you for downloading. Thank you for listening, and let's go Birds.